Well, with a house building boom now underway, are we failing to future-proof our building stock? There are growing calls for the Building Act to require all new housing to be easily adaptable for people with disabilities and for our ageing population. A recent study found that 1 in 6 New Zealanders needs modifications to their home. And yet the key features of accessibility, level pathways and entrances, an easily accessible bathroom and wide doorways, are only found in 5% of new homes. The Australian Federal Government has recently committed to incorporating universal design standards into its building code from the end of next year, meaning that by 2050, half of the housing stock should be accessible. With me to discuss, we welcome Prudence Walker, the Chief Executive of the Disabled Persons Assembly, and Paula Tesoriro, the Disability Rights Commissioner. Kia ora korua, welcome.
Morena, Catherine.
Great to have you both with us. Thank you. Paula, what are the experiences you're hearing from people with disabilities looking for a house to rent or to buy? What's happening?
Thanks, Catherine. There are a number of issues affecting access to housing by disabled people. So first of all, as you've rightly pointed out, there's a real lack of universal design adhered to in New Zealand. So that makes it really difficult to actually achieve accessible homes. So we know that disabled people find it difficult to access homes that are suitable. We know there are long waiting times for modifications. We know that affordability is an issue, but actually disabled people can't even buy their way out of the current situation, because even if you can afford to buy a home, actually the affordability and the accessibility of those homes are actually really difficult to find. We also know that in our cities and our urban design, you know, the infrastructure around the housing is not great across the country to support good housing solutions. We know security of tenure is an issue, and we have a long way to go in New Zealand to really improve access to a decent home for disabled people.
Can we look at both the situation now when it comes to the shortfall of good enough housing for people with disabilities, but also looking forward to an ageing population, many of whom will have disabilities in time? What's the difference between the current needs and what's available? Do we know?
Absolutely. I think you've raised some really good stats at the start that, you know, only 5% of new builds in New Zealand are built to universal design standard. And for those who don't have a good understanding of universal design, basically it's about building a property so that the widest number of people can enjoy it. Now, 24% of New Zealand's population are disabled, and that was a 2013 figure, so I suspect that the number is higher, coupled with our ageing population, means we actually can't afford any more to ignore this situation, because that need will rise. We know that disability increases with age. So the gap now and what we're trying to achieve is really significant. And it's really important to remember that housing is a human right. It's not just a commodity. It's a right to a decent home, which successive governments in New Zealand have failed to deliver. And it takes real leadership and commitment to deliver on that. And we have to do something.
Paula, did I see a figure somewhere that nationwide it's thought only 2% of housing stock is what would qualify as accessible now?
That's right. So at the moment, only 2% of our housing stock is accessible. Kāinga Ora have a target of building new homes to ensure that 15% of them are built to universal design. And I think it's sort of, it is probably worth just touching on the difference between universal design and accessibility for listeners. So universal design is basically things like level pathways, wider door frames, putting in reinforcing within walls, for example, so that later you can make a home accessible by doing things like then using that internal reinforcing in the wall to put a rail on for your shower. So even those core universal design standards are only found in 5% of new builds, and only 2% of our housing is thought to be accessible, yet 1 in 6 people require some form of adaptation to their home. So the sorts of stories that, you know, I hear on a very regular basis, Catherine, are, you know, people put into emergency accommodation because it's suitable housing just can't be found. It's one of the top issues that has been raised with me in my role. And, you know, although the government have made a commitment through the Disability Action Plan to improve accessibility across the New Zealand housing system, it is going to take a number of things to change and a plan to cohere all of that before it happens.
Kia ora, Paula, stay with us, please. Prudence Walker, welcome again, Chief Executive of the Disabled Persons Assembly. Can you tell me more, please, of people's experience, Prudence?
Yeah, well, Paula touched on people being in emergency accommodation, and in fact, within our own staff group, we had a staff member who was living in a motel for a year because he could not find an affordable, accessible house. He eventually found one a short time ago. And in fact, you know, sticking with our staff members, another is looking at buying a property at, say, an entry-level townhouse. And it's really difficult because a lot of those developments are two-storey with no bedrooms or bathrooms on the second floor, and things like a 10 centimetre lip, which may not sound much to somebody who doesn't have mobility issues, but for a lot of people, myself included, that's actually quite a big barrier for us in the things that we're looking at with housing. We've got situations like young people unable to leave home, staying with their parents because they just can't find accessible accommodation. We've heard about students who remain in hostels beyond their first year of university for the same reason, while their friends are all going flatting, which is kind of the usual thing to do at that stage of life. And really, there's just, you know, we hear all the time from our members, a lot of people are just actually even homeless because they can't they can't find suitable housing, or they're living in completely inadequate housing for their needs.
Have you done your own...
Which, of course, affects life.
Yeah. Have you done your own research on the lack of availability? I think... Was there a survey, a Trade Me survey?
So that actually was something that was brought up at a Wellington election forum around disability we had last year, and our MC for that forum had looked at the properties available on Trade Me and got candidates to guess how many properties there were, how many were accessible, and none of them were accessible.
What are the ways that people try and get around it? I think, was there a case, Prudence, someone showered at work because the bathroom at home wasn't accessible?
That's right. And I mean, I want to point out that those of us who are employed are in a privileged position in the fact that we do have an income. So the person who showered at work quite a while was in a position that they have a job and they have a workplace that has those facilities. But of course, you know, everybody else doesn't have to manage their life around showering at work. So it's completely unacceptable.
Prudence, if we look at what's happening now, which is that places are being built, although a lot of them will be apartments and townhouses, to your point, we've got the most building consents, I think, since the 1970s, happening right now. And as we said, this is about need right now, but it's also about inevitably growing need in the future. So can you speak to what having the universal design required of new builds, what difference that would make?
You know, it just would mean that there was not so much load on those of us who need accessible housing, and we could actually focus on other parts of our lives. You know, more people actually might be able to do the things they want in life or hold down a job because they don't have to worry about where they're going to shower, for example, or if they can get their mobility device into their apartment. It is things often like those, you know, 10 centimetre lips that are the problem. I myself don't require a fully accessible home. However, I do use a mobility scooter sometimes, so don't use that within my home, but I do need to get it in my home to charge it. So it seems really simple because I don't even need a fully accessible bathroom and everything as somebody else might. So when we can't even get sort of that basic accessibility right, we've got a real problem. And I guess, you know, housing lasts for generations and generations. So we talk about the housing crisis. The accessible housing crisis is absolutely dire, and every moment that it's delayed before we actually change that is actually generations that it's delayed because of the lifetime of housing.
Prudence, you use the word simple, and could some of this stuff actually be quite simple? It's not going to be a huge cost on construction, nor is it going to radically change the design of a house as it is now. It's just future-proofing, and is a lot of it quite simple?
You know, I'm not a builder, but I believe, from my understanding, you know, it's not difficult to build places that have flat entry into them. It's not difficult to think about how we design buildings and how people might be manoeuvring around them, or the fact that they might be using a wheelchair, so might require more space. I think that, you know, it does require some usable standards, but it also requires the people involved in developing housing to actually think about what the needs of people who are living in them might be.
Ngā mihi, Prudence. Paula, can I come back to you about the legislative history so far? I understand there was some disappointment in, well, I've heard from others, some disappointment in the recent building amendments legislation that I think went through a few weeks ago. Was that a lost opportunity to make some changes to New Zealand's building code? Is that going to be required?
Thanks, Catherine. So that legislative change that you refer to, my understanding is that the government prioritised some of the earthquake safety and strengthening changes that were necessary. There's a huge opportunity now moving forward to address a number of other issues, including the critical issue of accessibility. So I think the really key things that are needed from my perspective is, one, for New Zealand to recognise the right to a decent home as a human right. Secondly, the leadership and commitment from all levels. So that's central government, local government. It's the building industry, which of course is made up of builders, architects, regulators, property developers, planners, engineers. You know, it needs a commitment from all of them. And it requires, which is to your point about legislation, the right incentives and environment to deliver. And I'm of the view that that really requires legislative and regulatory change to deliver that, and actually a really coherent plan that brings together all of the agencies that work on housing to deliver this. And Catherine, I just want to give a couple of good examples around New Zealand where actually things are starting to be done well, because this does not have to be hard. So the Hamilton City Council signed up to some universal design standards by looking at what the future of Hamilton City looked like, and they've now put in place some targets. The Wellington City Council very recently, just in the last couple of weeks, indicated that they are starting to now do some work to look at targets for universal design. Fletcher Living, at a property development down south, had a target, and they delivered 50% of the homes to universal design standards. So there are those who are prepared to lead the way, and the challenge now is to create the right incentives through, you know, rates rebates and strong legislation, changes to the building code, to make sure that this crisis that disabled people have actually faced for a long time now can start to be resolved. And the cost of not doing it is really significant. And actually, I no longer buy the arguments around cost for universal design, because we know from study after study that the cost of creating universally designed houses up front is much cheaper than trying to retrofit later on.
Thank you both very, very much. Paula Tesorito there speaking is the Disability Rights Commissioner at the Human Rights Commission. Thanks very much also to Prudence Walker, Chief Executive of the Disabled Persons Assembly.